As I was reflecting on my conversation with Joseph Frost, and oh my, I am so grateful that I have come to know him as well as the organization that he co-founded, the Fractional Professional Association. There are so many senior leaders out there. Again, I am speaking to you today. You have been amazingly successful building teams, organizations, and businesses. And then sometimes you get to a point where things are changing, things are growing, for which you start looking around the room and saying, I need help. And sometimes you don't pull the trigger until you're in a place of crisis. But I would love, love, love to propose to all those leaders out there that are starting to feel uncomfortable. They know their core business. They might need an additional resources, but they don't need a full-time equivalent. Might you consider a fractional leader? Highly talented, high value, and bring them on when you need them at the rate you need them to provide maximum value back to your business. So I ask you, if you're out there, has this come across your mind? And if it is bothering you, if it is something that you've been thinking about, stay tuned for the rest of this conversation with Joseph Frost.
The entrepreneur or the business leader has a duty to not be in the business, but be more on the business and growing the business. And it's the E-Myth model, right? There's the technician, the manager, and the entrepreneur. And the entrepreneur's role is to grow and think of vision. The manager's to manage the systems and lead the people, and the technician's to do the work. Well, as entrepreneurs and business owners, we get that. And most of us have elevated to a level of being kind of at that on and vision business. But then when you think about that at even a micro level inside the C-suite, well, how many entrepreneurs are wearing multiple hats? And in a sense, you're leading marketing, you're leading sales, you're leading operations, you're leading finance. Usually it's that C-level leader that's still wearing multiple hats. And in that analogy, they're still a technician. They're still doing the work. So they have to get across this idea that I need leaders that I can truly offboard this ownership to so I can continue to focus on vision and growth of the company.
Welcome to the Drop-In CEO podcast. I'm Deb Coviello, and as the Drop-In CEO, I drop into businesses and assume the CEO role to enhance the human element and increase the results they achieve. This podcast is about bringing you conversations with expert guests who have achieved their greatest results built on a strong foundation of purpose, values, and elevating people. If you're a business leader, entrepreneur, or even just getting started in business, join us as we build the skills you need to achieve your goals.
Hello, I am Deb Coviello, founder of the Drop-In CEO brand, where I get to speak to amazing leaders week after week and bring their insights and inspiration to you. And if you love this episode, and I know you will, we ask that you subscribe, rate, and review so we can continue to bring you amazing programming. And just know, I am here for the C-suite leaders of today and tomorrow to help you navigate those challenges with confidence. And now I am so honored to bring onto the show Joe Frost. Joe is a global speaker, thinker, and entrepreneur leading the fractional and decentralized leadership model into the future of work. And his keynotes and talks are built for forward-thinking entrepreneurs and leaders. Joe is the founder of Your CMO, the first decentralized leadership franchise business, and is the head of the Fractional Professionals Association, the first and only community for decentralized fractional executives and leaders looking to join the future of work. He is also the host of the weekly podcast, The Fractional C-Suite Retreat, for which I have been a guest on. It was amazing. It is my honor, Joe, to welcome you onto the show.
Oh, thank you, Deb. It's so great to be here. And I love your radio voice. It's so smooth and sultry. I want to hear some music now. Turn up the next tune, please.
You know, before we get into this interview, we got to go there. So many people in the last week have said, your voice. I know. Got to figure out a way how to monetize that thing. We'll go with it. We'll find a way someday. But thank you so much. And I didn't pay you for that. But anyway, for those of you who are listening, Joe and I have come together through the fractional space. I came to know Joe because I am a member of the Fractional Professional Association because I was looking for my people. I see this amazing business model for people that are so, so talented to be able to provide high value when it's needed at the frequency it's needed. So the work he's doing is amazing. I want you to listen to this. Joe, you have the floor. Share with us a bit about yourself personally and how you have arrived at this amazing work.
Oh, great. Well, very grateful to be here. And we met through the Fractional Professional Association because we were reaching out and trying to build community of our own. Decentralized leadership and fractional leadership, it's a very new thing. It's emerging and it's different. So there's not a lot of traditional ways to learn about it and be around others that are in the midst of doing it. And so that's the essence behind the community. And, you know, I love talking about decentralized leadership because I think it's the one thing that entrepreneurs need to know about today to really grow their business. I think it's the global pandemic has cast upon us this great opportunity. And if we think about it as an opportunity, it's an amazing, amazing opportunity to grow your business. The best story I told recently at a speaking event was there was a fractional leader out of Canada and I spoke to him. His name was Trevor. Trevor was leaving his full-time job, actually had left his full-time job a couple of years earlier and fractioned his time back to his employer. That was an interesting little twist because he wanted to go out on his own. He was kind of tired of doing full-time for one place. He built his own fractional practice. His wife was just about to do the exact same thing. She approached her employer and said, I want to leave, but I want to give you a fraction of my time back so she could start her fractional practice. And both these are highly qualified, competent people. Of course, their employers wanted to retain them. So it made perfectly good sense. To top it off, Trevor tells me that he and his wife are moving from Vancouver, Canada to Costa Rica with their two kids to live and run their remote businesses. So not only is he leaving fractionally, he's leaving physically. And those are the leaders of today that are out there, highly competent, highly mobile, ready to work. They'll own the work and they'll do the work, but they don't want to be full-time in your office. And I think that's what business owners need to understand is the talent pool is enormous when you look for that type of person. Now, you want to look for a full-time C-level person, the talent pool shrinks quite a bit and your budget escalates quite a bit as well. It's the best kept secret. More people just need to know about it and think about it.
Amazing insight. And I want to just go a little bit in another direction here because, again, I get the fractional leadership. I love to drop in, as people know, to help them with a very specific business problem, get them through the challenge. But I find once we provide that high value and they say, can you do this? Can you do that? Often those relationships continue, again, as needed, when is needed, at the rate that it's needed. But again, you touched on a little bit about decentralized leadership. I think I understand the terminology, but tell us more and why we need to be thinking and acting on this a little bit.
Yeah, it's a foreign word for even me still. It's a concept that kind of emerged through blockchain, you know, decentralized transactions being able to be completed and owned and recorded away from the central bank or central body. And when you apply that kind of thinking to leadership, think about it as our typical traditional leadership is very hierarchical. You got someone at top who tells the next level down, who tells the next level down. Well, my idea behind decentralized leadership is that we're all leaders at every level. And if we can level out to level up, then we can think of ourselves as a much more productive organization because crucial decisions are being made at all levels of the business. It speeds it up. There's more ownership. There's ability then for the others in the organization to think about different things and not worry about the decisions that they're trying to trickle down to implement. It's a concept that is new also and emerging. I like new and emerging ideas, but it's something that I get to practice internally with my company and share externally with other companies. And it's amazing what I'm seeing happen. We're transforming teams of people to be much more accountable, much more excited about their roles, and much more confident in making decisions within their ownership area that they weren't making before or confident of. And it's all because of this idea that we're all leaders, we're all on the same level, and it's decentralized in a way that it doesn't require a central point or a hierarchical leader to disseminate direction and hold people accountable. It's peer-to-peer accountability, and it works. It's a big cultural shift. And where I've seen it work first and foremost is in small teams. So how do you grow that into larger teams? And has yet to be identified, but it's an opportunity as well. And the fractional leader is kind of a practicing model there, because by definition, you're fractional. You're not there full time. So you're decentralized in that way. Geographically, you're not there. So you're decentralized in that way. And you take full ownership of an area or business. So you now own the decisions in that area. But it also expands to global workforce. We have a lot of people that work remotely for us in both client work in our own business in the Philippines and Mexico. And geographically, they're not there, but they are there full time for us to work. They have different cultures, different values and different things that we have to understand and integrate. And so the more we can level that out and decentralize the thinking and decision making, the teamwork, the less dependent they are on the home office or somebody at a higher level. And they're able to make decisions quicker, faster, and better for the organization and themselves in that decentralized approach.
I'm so glad that you brought this up, because it plays into some of the insights I've also realized. I put a lot of this also into my book, The CEO's Compass. I ask questions like, why cannot everybody be a high performer? I mean, yes, we put those people on a pedestal that are loud, outspoken, have the results, and so we cultivate those as the next leaders. But do we seriously take the time to look deep into the organization, ask the right questions? Do you have what you need to succeed? Are there quiet leaders out there that are actually running the show, but we've never taken the time to understand them and develop them and give them the authority? I think there's a leader in everybody out there, regardless of what role they're in. And I think that the more we do that, the better. And that is even the value of what a fractional leader can do. Yes, we roll up our sleeves and provide whatever that need is for the business. But we have all this experience. We see the people in a whole new light. We also, and I know I do this, I try to elevate their confidence and their capability while they're in our care, either helping them with new skills that we bring to the organization, or just the confidence that they can do it, and maybe better ways to position information, proposals, et cetera. So the fractional leader integrates really, really well with your concept of decentralized leadership.
Absolutely. It's probably the easiest one for an organization to attach to, because it is some implicit trust in hiring an experienced 30 plus year, not to age anybody, leader. There's a big trust gap that has to be filled in order for decentralized leadership to work. I think trust is the key. It's a little bit easier to trust someone who's been in a business organization for 30 plus years to come in and take over ownership than it is to trust somebody you've never met that lives across the globe. There's a real trust factor. So I think the fractional leadership is the easier one for people to adopt from a decentralized leadership model. But to start thinking about your remote leaders, your remote workers, your remote employees, and they could be remote across the street, you know, these days. Remote is not necessarily a global phenomenon. It's more of a technology phenomenon. But to start giving ownership to those remote workers as opposed to people in the building, that's a bigger leap, I think, sometimes for organizations that are more traditional. The other piece of this that I think your experience with the different frameworks out there, like EOS traction and scaling up and disciplines D2X, those models are built and very effective, but they do not address this decentralized leadership phenomenon. They're very top-down, they're very structured, and they're very hierarchical in the way they approach things. And I think we're seeing that play out, at least in the organizations I'm with, that people kind of go through the motions and set the goals and rocks, but don't really believe or own in them because they're top-down. And what I've been doing is we've been spinning some of our EOS work that we do internally by adding decentralized leadership exercises to gain more ownership in those rocks or priorities and more clarity in those roles. And rather than setting roles and expectations and rocks for people, it's becoming more like agreements between the team to do things. And that agreement between the team has completely changed how we look at winning and losing every quarter, because it's not the silo, did you do your rock or not do your rock? It's the team. Did we make our agreements together? Or did we not? And that just changes the dynamic. And it's been very effective within our organization.
What's really interesting about that, and you've got me thinking a bit as well. So I am a fractional leader. As you say, we provide that high value. We work from anywhere. But it's interesting that as an add-on, we should look at the organization and provide that extra value. What are the service level agreements between the individual areas? Because at the end of the day, it's that collaboration, the speed at which we can make decisions. And if you don't have decision makers in all the remote areas, again, it slows down decision making and moving the company forward. So I really love that. Now, I want to take this just in a little bit direction because this thing of fractional leadership serves two demographics. It is for those companies that are going through some kind of change that may need that. And then there are really smart people out there. They are call themselves consultants or wondering, what am I going to do next? And to entertain the world of fractional leadership. Now, what would you say to the company that hasn't invested in fractional leadership? What are they feeling? What should they be asking themselves? And maybe consider that model. Because if you can say it well, oh boy, it's going to help me as well.
Well, I think there's two things that come to mind. And I share this when I speak to audiences, is that the entrepreneur or the business leader has a duty to not be in the business, but be more on the business and growing the business. And it's the E-Myth model. There's the technician, the manager, and the entrepreneur. And the entrepreneur's role is to grow and think of vision. The manager's to manage the systems and lead the people, and the technicians to do the work. Well, as entrepreneurs and business owners, we get that. And most of us have elevated to a level of being kind of at that on and vision business. But then when you think about that kind of even a micro level inside the C-suite, well, how many entrepreneurs are wearing multiple hats? And in a sense, you're leading marketing, you're leading sales, you're leading operations, you're leading finance. Maybe you bring in a finance person that leads HR for you. Maybe bring in a salesperson that might lead marketing. But usually it's that C-level leader that's still wearing multiple hats. And in that analogy, they're still a technician. They're still doing the work. So they have to get across this idea that I need leaders that I can truly offboard this ownership to so I can continue to focus on vision and growth of the company. And that's the first thing. And the second thing is the Dan Sullivan book, Who Not How. And it's understanding that as entrepreneurs, oftentimes, and as leaders, we're trying to solve problems, figuring out how to solve them first. And truly successful teams and organizations have realized that you need to solve it by finding the who, not the how. Who do I know that can solve this problem that's already solved this problem for me? So I can find more who's and keep solving the big problems that maybe haven't been solved before or I shouldn't solve. And so when you combine those two things together, I call it the entrepreneurial duty, which is you need to focus on vision and growth, take off those hats and find the who's and surround yourselves with the who's that can wear those hats as good or better than you. They may not be always better, but they're likely as good and you need to free up your time. And the key to all of that is trust. Because if you can't trust that individual to wear that hat, you'll always be micromanaging them, always second guessing them, always wondering if their how is the right how. And you have to figure out how to build trust. In our system, your CMO, every step of our process from first time you met a lead through prospect, through sales, through delivery, we have touch points specifically focused on building trust between the fractional professional and the C-level leader. There's every step of the way. Because once that trust is broken, the engagement's over. And it's hard to build it, but it's super easy to lose it.
You know, the word about trust is really, really important because while it is also for the client to trust this business model to move them from wearing all the hats to doing the purposeful work and let somebody else take it as well, I will share an example. There's also trust on the fractional leader. I was invited into an organization to provide my assessment on what needed to be done. And the trust was immense. Again, I was referred to them. And also then in our conversations, they said, yes, that's what we need. I will tell you, in the back of my head, I know I'm a smart person. I'm not sure how I will do all of it. However, I am resourceful. I have their trust. And they trust me that I will figure it out, all of it along the way. So trust is really important, both for the client who needs the fractional leader and the fractional leader to trust yourself. You can serve more clients than you think.
Yeah, absolutely. Trust is so critical. It just seems like it's a table stake, like it should be there, but it's not. It takes work. I've found that it's in the fractional world, there's two things to build trust that I focus on, and it's time and touch. So you have to make time because you're fractional. You're not there all the time. You're not around the corner. You're not dropping in. You're not saying hi. So you have to be much more intentional about making those outreaches and those opportunities to touch the C-suite and other team players, whether it be subordinates or whether it be just across the sales channel from a marketing standpoint, reaching out and talking. It's those constant, forceful or intentional touch points that are time that is extremely important. And then the touch aspect, you know, because we are remote and global and it's hard to really be in the same room ever, and the expectation is we never need to be anymore. What we found is that the trust factor is much harder to build that way. So we have, in our process, we've essentially made it commonplace now that all of our new engagements kick off with an in-person meeting, no matter where they are, between not only the CMO, but one of the owners of the company and the client. We want to make that commitment to building the trust. And we try to do it every quarter as well, as much as possible. That's something that isn't necessary, but because trust is so important to us, we're making that intention. And most of those visits are at our cost, not extra cost to the client, because we know it's so valuable to happen.
Very, very important. So now I want to flip it to the other side. So fractional leaders out there, you may not identify as a fractional leader. What would you say to those highly talented people that want to continue to be of service, but haven't even thought of this model? And again, it's a little bit more than just putting a shingle on your door and saying, here I am. What would you say to them to gain their trust, build their confidence that there is a world of people to serve and might consider this model for themselves?
Yeah, we work with marketers that are in a couple different stages before they consider joining our firm. And one stage is they've been in full-time marketing roles their whole careers in large or small corporations or agencies, and they're ready to go out on their own. So that persona, if you will, just has never done it before. And the idea of finding a organization or a team you can quickly latch onto and learn from, I think is really important. The other persona is somebody who's been out there consulting, in our case, doing ending up starting with some strategic work and then doing tactical work and then going kind of an ebb and flows of up and down, chasing work, doing work, chasing work, doing work. And what we share with them is you just need a better model and better support for your client work. So the better model is to stay strategic. You can be a fractional leader and you just need to layer in the support of tactical around you so you don't allow yourself to dip in scope-wise. And then you need to have a really strong sales and lead gen system. So you need to build that yourself, or you can also align yourself with organizations that can help you with that. But there's two types of personas out there.
So I can resonate with the second persona because, again, I think I'm pretty talented at what I do. That's what the people say that have brought me in. But what I do find is if I've been an operations person, I've never done sales and marketing. I do know how to use my voice to connect with people. But what does that look like to create lead gens in a way to know exactly how to target the people with the right messaging, build trust, and ultimately close the sale is challenging. So learning a few of those skills from such organizations as fractional professional associate is really, really valuable. And I know I've learned a lot as well. So we're going to take a moment. You call yourself the idea guy. I've been meaning to ask you, it's on your headline on LinkedIn. What does that mean? How did you come up with that brand for yourself?
I love the question. I've grown up and I've always just had ideas. I've never not known myself. So it's not been weird or odd to just have dozens of ideas every day and none of them work, and that's fine. But when I started interacting 15 years ago or so with the startup community, and I wanted to like get everybody to take one of my ideas and build a widget. And I was kept going around and talking to people like, hey, we could do this together. We could do this together. And people were like, so you've got a lot of ideas, but there's no action behind it. And it really made me sit and think for a second, like, hey, you're right. I need others to action part. I'm just the idea guy. And at first I was kind of guilty feeling because of that. And it was intentionally kind of, they were guilting me like, you know, don't come and ask me to develop some little app for you because you've got a good idea. You need to go develop yourself, like go do the work. You know, the idea is not any good. It's the action that matters most. And I agree, they're symbiotic. But then I realized, you know what? All I got, I'm an idea guy. That's what I bring. And so for people that are looking for ideas or organizations, when I get involved and I'm the visionary, I can bring the ideas. And I'm okay with that. And I'm completely accepting that. And I said, why don't I just put the banner up and say, that's who I am. So that's why I began to own the term idea guy, self-proclaimed, but it works. And it took me a long time to be confident in being okay with just being the idea guy. I don't have to be the action person. And it's okay. That's my gift. That's my passion area. That's where I offer the most value. That's where I get the most energy. And when I get outside of that, like I can take on a client and I can do CMO work for like 3 months and I'm miserable and the client's miserable. But when I find a vision for an idea and bring another CMO to execute that, it's perfection. Like my role is not to do the work. And it sounds maybe like I'm trying not to do work, but that's just who I am and how I'm wired. And where I figured that out, if I can stay in my lane, I can be very successful.
So what I would appreciate about that is I once was working with another leader. We were kind of tag team. He was the head of quality. I was the head of operational excellence. And he would just be all over the whiteboard with all of their ideas and fluffy clouds and bunnies and all of that. And I'm like sitting down, getting all jazzed about the ideas. And I'm waiting. I said, okay, so where's the execution? What are we going to do? How are we going to make this an action? And I would get so impatient. The meeting would be done and say, okay. And I would go be so frustrated. So I became the action person, hence operations, manufacturing. So we were really good hand in hand. He'd be the idea guy and I would be the, how are we going to get it done? But then it's interesting as we change. I have so many ideas. I don't have enough people or time in the day to get all the ideas done. Hence, I have to prioritize and be realistic. I hope someday I can go back to being the idea person and have a group of people around me that get me and can execute. But I so get we have to celebrate our gifts when we come into an organization. We can't own all of them, but know what we're good in and bring in some really smart people to work with Joe.
Yeah. And that's where fractional comes in. Because when you know your limitations as an executive team member, you can bring a fraction now in to fill that gap or that void or that need. You don't need another full-time person. We can fill it with fractional. And that's the beauty of the model. And not everybody needs an idea guy. But if you need a fractional idea guy, I'm here. I'll serve that purpose. But what people do need are complementary skill sets inside of any team. And operation people complement idea people all the time very well. And you probably need more of a full-time operation person than you do an idea person. Like an idea person can just wear out everybody on the team super fast.
I'll challenge you on that. Yes, you might need a full-time or a part-time fractional operations person to get the processes going, get the service level agreements between the interested parties, build up the capability and the confidence and have them. Then you step away and watch the decentralized leadership take it from here.
Yes.
So I get it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. 100%.
So one last question, and I've never asked this of you before. So you have your CMO, fractional professional. I think you've probably started a bunch of other things along the way, but you're a leader, you're an owner. When have you also found it challenging and how did you get through it? Because I'm sure you didn't necessarily have all the revenue, all the business in the beginning. Maybe you did and you're one of the lucky few, but what was it like growing these entities, knowing this is the right thing to do, but it was still not sustainable? Tell me more about that and how'd you get through it?
Yeah, that's a great story. So I actually filmed a documentary, a little bit about my origin story, I'll call it. It's called Winter is Coming. And it's a story about the seasons of entrepreneurship. And if you go to my website, josephmarkfrost.com, you can get a link to it. And in that documentary, I shared kind of a look back as to a really difficult time in my life, in my entrepreneurial life and journey. And I discovered it was a winter. And as entrepreneurs, we are all in different season. And we go through the ups and the highs of spring and the excitement of starting. And then we go through summer where maybe we're growing. And then we get into fall where we can harvest. But at some point, we're going through a winter where everything's not working or has to end. And I went through a very difficult winter with one of my businesses. I was in the mortgage industry in the Great Recession. And overnight, we went from 120 loan officers to 20. With a 20,000 square foot building that we couldn't afford anymore. And it put so much stress and strain on our business and my personal life and my relationships with my team. And that led to about a 10-year winter for me. Now, it was 10 years of learning and I wouldn't change it all, but I went through some of the craziest, worst stories that you'll hear entrepreneurs go through. Lawsuits, bankruptcy, loss of friendships, and really got to a very, 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 very low. And during that moment, in my lowest moment, what brought me out of that was my family. And that's always been a core part of who I am. It's something that I value very much. And it was really important to keep my family together through that whole season we were in. And I did, and I'm proud. We have a great relationship with my wife and our four kids. But that challenge was just really difficult. And I had to learn how to completely reinvent and reimagine and re-engineer myself through that process. And it wasn't easy, but I was able to get through it with peers, other entrepreneurs. Peers in general are the best source for help and support going through anything like that. In my case, having other entrepreneurs that knew what I was and knew what I could be helped me get out of that area. I had to find a completely new discipline. I went from mortgage industry to marketing. I had to convince people that, you know, a mortgage guy can be a marketer. So I'd completely reinvent and relearn and reimagine who I could be. And then the hardest part, I think, was I had to become a leader again. And I had to understand what about myself had to change. And I had to gain my confidence and I had to gain my self-esteem. And I had to go through that process before I could start inspiring others to follow me. And that leadership journey, you know, has been remarkable. And I wouldn't change it for the world. But those deep hardships that we go through as entrepreneurs, every single time I tell that story to audiences, small and large, every entrepreneur in the room has had a winter. Some are different depths than others, but they've all had a winter and everybody gets it. And we've all had our springs. And where I really like to focus now is that springtime. That's when the new ideas come, the innovation comes, the energy comes. And when you can find your spring, that's the way you get out of the winter. And anytime I'm in a winter, anytime I'm in a down spot, I'm looking for a new idea. And maybe that's why I'm an idea guy. Like, I love to live in spring and I love to live in that time where things are new and exciting. And that's where I get my most energy. So now that's been my journey. And people can check into that documentary. It's a great story about entrepreneurship. I interview three other entrepreneurs and they tell a different story about the different season. There's a spring story that's hilarious. There's a summer story that's unexpected and an exit story that's just not something you've ever heard of before. And they're all tied into it. So that's my two cents, Deb.
Such inspiration. And while it tells the story of entrepreneurship, it easily translates to anybody, regardless of where they're at in a career. If they are that C-suite leader that might need some fractional leadership to get them out of the winter, or an aspiring C-suite leader. Think about the winters. They are those opportunities to get into spring. And the interesting thing I'm thinking about is, can you really tell when it's a winter or maybe it's a spring? Because it may be low, but then that's when that creativity starts coming out. I got to do something different. Might that be the early spring? You never know. It's a little blurry, but it's very interesting. Joe, thank you. We didn't even get into curling.
That's right. We missed our opportunity.
Joe and I are both curling. I've liked my summer, but I can't wait till the curling season again. We both share the love of the sport, but I will end this on an inspiring note. I sincerely appreciate your story, the success of the fractional space. Any last things that you want to share with our listeners?
Oh, I would just say that, you know, I've discovered that gratitude is one of the biggest ways to uplift your spirits, whether you're in a winter or a storm or any time. And I'm really grateful for being here today. I'm grateful for being able to share the message about fractional leadership with the audience. I'm grateful for sharing my story about my winter. It always brings me joy to be able to share that with someone else because I know other people may be going through it and need to hear it. So I'm very grateful for that opportunity. And I'm hopeful that all your listeners take a little something away to make a difference today and a difference tomorrow.
All right, Joe, you've been an amazing guest. Thank you so much, and I wish you continued success.
Thank you for listening to the Drop-In CEO Podcast. My new book, CEO's Compass, will change the way you think about leadership, navigate rapid transformation, and elevate the leaders of tomorrow. If you're feeling off track, the CEO's Compass assessment will guide you to peace of mind in days, not months. You can learn more about the CEO's Compass by visiting my website at dropinceo.com. Now go out and lead, inspire, and achieve your goals.